This episode of the Golf Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented to you by the SGPN Merch Store. Use promo code SGPNNBA to get 10% off everything in the store. Surprise, D-Gens. If you are on Twitter this morning, maybe you are surprised to see my tired face live streaming to you this morning. Maybe this is a terrible idea, but I'm about to go on vacation. I am about to break up a trip on a drive down to the Outer Banks. Single dad, because my wife is visiting a friend in Virginia Beach. So I have myself, I have my toddler, I have the dog. I have to pack the car today of all their stuff to make sure all of them don't go crazy. Pray for me today. But I also don't have an opportunity to do the preview show this weekend for you. We're staying in a hotel in West Virginia. Don't worry. It's not Deliverance, West Virginia. Sorry if there's any West Virginia fans that listen to our show. Although, looking at the download reports, I don't think there are anybody in West Virginia who actually listen to us. So I can say whatever I want about that state right now. That's not Deliverance, West Virginia we're staying at. It's more commercialized West Virginia, where people who are trying to get to I-95 from maybe New York or Pennsylvania stop and spend the night and go there. So we're staying there overnight, and then we are driving to the Outer Banks on Sunday. So, but being the hardworking SGPN independent contractor that I am, I wanted to give you the Mexico Open preview, especially because this is a terrible field. It's actually somehow worse than I thought it was going to be. I did not have the high expectations. It's really bad. We'll go over the field in a little bit. We'll go over the golf course. We only have 1 year of it. Gonna be honest, I was on vacation last year. Don't remember a whole lot of it. I'm not gonna watch probably a whole lot of it this week either, but I look back at how the leaderboard was formulated, some of the approach shots they hit. We can talk about that. And then we'll talk about some overall general batting strategies, what we'll be looking for this week, and maybe just guessing the odds. So with that, why don't we get right to the field? And well, as you probably have seen, John Rahm is the big fish in this field. There's another guy who's pretty good. I think, you know, the only other guy who really presents a serious threat to Rahm is Tony Finau. Tony Finau played last year too. He finished second. So, but otherwise, though, I believe I saw this stat earlier that I think there are only 9 of the top 100 golfers in the world are actually playing this thing. And actually, after Rahm and Finau, the next highest ranked golfer is Alex Noren. And to go from there, it goes Alex Noren, Andrew Putnam, Davis Riley, Gary Woodland, who's going to be really popular this week. Wyndham Clark, also going to be really popular this week. Maverick McNealy, Emiliano Grillo. How the hell is he in the top 100 now? Brandon Wu. Or no, I'm sorry. Brandon Wu is not in the top 100. So it is just those 9 players in the top 100 in this field. It's a bad field. Really bad. If you're not gambling on this thing, it's probably going to be a tough watch. Probably a good opportunity if it's nice to go golfing, do some yard work, all that stuff. It is what it is. These guys have had to take a week off at some point. We have been on a slew of elevated events going all the way back to I think Scottsdale is the first one. We've had a lot since then. We've had a major. We got another major in a month. This guy's got to take a week off at some point. I'm surprised John Rahm is here. I understand my co-host is infatuated with the guy and romanticized him about trying to grow the game in Mexico and doing all that. Fine. Kudos to John Rahm for showing up as a defending champion and being here. Otherwise, though, I have high hopes for him for the PGA. I was kind of hoping he would take a week off, you know, cool the jets a little bit. Not going to do that. It is what it is. So that's the field. I'll go over at the end of the show what I think the odds are going to shape out to be. It's pretty disgusting, to be honest, what they're going to be probably for everybody past Rahm and Finau. So before I get to the golf course, though, which is really why you're here, why don't I take a quick break and then we'll get right to it. All right. So this show, the Golf Gaming Podcast, is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. The NBA and NHL playoffs are here, and what better way to get down some player prop analysis than over at Underdog Fantasy? Besides daily NHL, NBA, and MLB games, they've also already got NFL best ball drafts with a guaranteed $500,000 in prizes. Head over to UnderdogFantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for 100% deposit bonus up to $100. That's UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. All right, well, let's talk about the Danta Vallarta, the legendary great golf course that it is. You probably can tell that I'm very tired and very salty this morning based on how I'm going to be talking about this golf course. Probably maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you guys are going to be entertained with me just kind of crapping all of this thing. I'm not going to exactly crap all over it. It's fine. So the Mexico Open itself, though, this is a pretty old and prestigious event, at least. It was prestigious. It has its origins back to the 40s. It was first played at Chapultepec, which was the site of WGC Mexico a few years ago. Rest in peace. I always enjoyed that tournament. That golf course wasn't very good either, but I always seemed to kind of enjoy that one. It always seemed to produce kind of a nice, good finish at the end. But over its history, it's been an event on the Latin American Tour. It's been on the European Challenge Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour. The Mexico Open has a lot of really good winners over its career. Tony Lima, who tragically passed away after, I think, winning one or two major championships and have like 9 or 10 top tens in like 14 majors. So very underrated golfer over history, and tragically his life was cut short. You got Lee Trevino, Billy Casper, Ben Crenshaw, all Masters winners. And then Stuart Sink also has won the Mexico Open. However, starting last year, the 2022 Mexico Open, the PGA Tour designated that as an official sanctioned PGA Tour event for 500 FedEx Cup points and all that jazz. So this is the second year of it, and it is going to be held at Vedanta Vallarta, which is on the west coast of Mexico on the Pacific Ocean. It is a Greg Norman signature course. It opened in 2016. It's on the banks of the Amica River. And, it's a very pretty golf course, much like Mayakoba is pretty for, another Norman design in Mexico. This one's not as tight and tree-lined. Mayakoba's more feels like it's kind of going through a jungle. Here, it's definitely very resort course. Pretty wide open. It's got some, a lot of palm trees, got a nice view of the Sierra Madre Mountains too, very close proximity to the Pacific Ocean. A very flat piece of property too. There's very little elevation change. I think the highest elevation is about 19 feet, the lowest about 15. Very flat piece of property. I mean, that's usually typical for resort courses, especially in Mexico, where you might get a little bit of an older demographic, can't really handle a big walk. It's nothing spectacular about the land itself. I think just going through Google imagery, I believe it was just it was farmland across the river, across from the resort, and they built a bridge over to the golf course. It's actually, I think, kind of far away from the resort there. Needed to be because it's a very long golf course. They need a lot of real estate to do that. So the resort guests, it actually plays the par 73. I think the back nine scorecard, I remember looking last year, I didn't look it up for this year, but it's kind of nuts. I think there's like six par fives on the golf course. And I think starting at hole 13, it goes par five, par three, par five, par three, the rest of the way. I guess Greg Norman didn't really want to have a whole lot of par fours on the back nine here, but a couple of the par fives are going to be converted to some par fours. So it's going to be a par 71. It runs at 7,456 yards in the scorecard. However, I'll talk about it a little bit with the golf course in just a bit. There's a lot of opportunities to shorten it up based on some of the drive lines and, angles off the tee these guys are going to be taking. So, even after a year, there's not really a whole lot of information about the golf course. There's a couple of reviews on Golf Pass, a couple of bloggers who wrote about their experience with the golf course. Most of the reviews on Golf Pass are pretty negative. I think they were pretty upset about, at least last year, how there was a quick turnaround to try and get this tournament ready for PGA Tour play, and a lot of holes were closed, and there were some temporary greens, and people were pretty upset about paying a whole lot of money to play this place. Whatever, man. Last year, I did a hole by hole breakdown of each hole at Vedanta Vallarta to help you guys out, just kind of how I would, well, how I would play this place is probably I probably would shoot 102 here, but how I thought these guys were going to attack it. If I'm not going to go through hole by hole again this year, if you guys want a refresher, go look at last year's article. I'm just going to cover, and I think just because, you know, it's early, I got to get going, I'm going to talk about just the main points of what you need to know about Vedanta Vallarta and the Mexico Open to help you gamble. I'm not going to ramble all over the place. So the one thing that I think that I remember talking about this last year, I know Andy Lack, our good podcast friend, he also was on this too. We were talking a lot about this tournament just before last year, just kind of theorizing what was going to happen. We both felt that this is going to be a very driver heavy golf course and that length is going to have a big advantage here. And that's exactly what happened. We'll go over how the leaderboard shaped out last year, but pretty much up to our expectations, that's what happened. You can hit driver on every single par four or five. There's not really a whole lot of adversity on the golf course off the fairway. The rough is not all that penal. At this place, it's a resort course. You don't usually see a whole lot of thick rough, inhibiting some of these resort guests in tropical locations. The fairways are pretty wide, between like 35, 40, 45 yards wide. You know, there's an occasional fairway bunker that'll be in the driving zone, but it's not overwhelming. There are a couple water hazards, but either on some of the holes, they're just way, way off where these guys are aiming, and it would take an extreme miss, or these guys aren't even aiming that way and they're hitting away from it. So, I think on some of the par threes, there's some water, but overall, though, I can only think of maybe one or two holes where these guys might have water coming into play with their drive. So, you can hit driver pretty much all day here. Everything's right on front of you. There's not a whole lot of trees. Well, there's palm trees, but not a whole lot of like thick trees where like you wouldn't be able to get a shot into the green there. So as long as guys just don't miss huge here, you know, you can just wail away at this place. And, another thing to keep in mind too, and I think this is why this thing turned into a contest of who can drive it the best, is the Pass Palom. So Pass Palom is a very popular resort grass for a lot of southern locations near the ocean because it's very salt tolerant. Basically, there's a lot of salt that's in the air from the seawater, and the grass just naturally absorbs a lot of this, you know, the aerosols from the ocean water, and it can damage the agronomy. It can, you know, basically make the turf die. I mean, you can't pour salt water on grass and expect it to grow. But Pass Palom is very salt tolerant. So, you know, that's a very popular grass to use by the ocean. It's very slow, though. Once the ball hits the ground on Pass Palom, it sticks like Velcro. Last year you saw a lot of guys with a lot of length do very well at this place. I mean, it's about 7,500 yards. Guys who hit it a long ways and carry it pretty far in the air had a pretty good advantage at this place because they can get it a little closer to the green, a little shorter approach shot. And then on the green too, you know, once the ball hits the putting surface, it stops. Again, it's like Velcro. And not only is that pretty advantageous for iron play, especially if you're a really good iron player, you can do very well on Pass Palom. You see like Hovland has won several times on Pass Palom. It makes it a little easier to get around up and down from around the green too. And part of it has to do with the fact that the ball sits up really nicely on Pass Palom. It's not like Bermuda where it kind of lays flat and you got to kind of hit down and like really clip it really good. And Pass Palom sits up just a fraction of a little bit where you can really easily slide the club underneath. I mean, resort guests love it because, you know, they struggle to make ball first contact with their clubs. So having the ball kind of up a little bit in the fairway or around the green helps the guests kind of clip it. Well, the same thing can be said about a guy who kind of struggles around the green too. I mean, if you struggle with club or ball first contact with your chip shots, you know, Pass Palom really helps you. So you can get clean contact in. And then even if you struggle a little bit with your distance control at Pass Palom, because it plays so slow and the ball really sticks, it's not going to roll out very far. And I think that's why a guy like Victor Hovland, he probably should play this thing because he's great on Pass Palom. I think four of his wins have come on Pass Palom. that's why a guy like Hovland, who struggles around the green, can find a lot of success because he's a great iron player. And when he hits the green, he's usually in pretty close proximity to the pin. And when he misses a green, his margin for error is a lot bigger on past problems. So, you know, that can be a big relief for guys who can struggle around the green. So overall with this golf course, it's not special. I mean, I get on this show a lot and don't really have a whole lot of great things to say about Greg Norman designs. His designs usually are kind of one note, a little homogenous. They all kind of demand that guys drive it really well. Greg Norman is one of the best drivers in history. It's no surprise that a lot of his golf courses kind of demanded to drive it pretty well. But there's not really a whole lot of character with it, a lot, no uniqueness, not really a whole lot of strategy. It really is, you get up to the tee, hit it straight, hit it long, similar looking greens, similar looking bunkers, not a whole lot of complexity of those either. I mean, the surroundings are really pretty. The resort is very nice too. I mean, it's one of your typical all-inclusive Mexican resorts with a couple golf courses. So if you want to take the family, have a nice little vacation, maybe that's why some of these players are here. It's a, you know, excuse to get away. It might be spring break week for a couple of their kids too. This is a great place to do it. But overall, for a PGA Tour golf course, fairly forgettable. So why don't we take another quick break, and then we'll quickly go over betting strategies, just everything you need to know. So, all right. We are also brought to you by the SGPN merch store. So, in honor of the NBA playoffs from now until the end of April, get 10% off anything in the SGPN merch store when you use promo code SGPNNBA. So, head over to store.sportsgamblingpodcast.com and use the promo code SGPNNBA to get 10% off everything mentioned. And then, you know, one of the things I really like, I'm going to bring this to the Outer Banks with me, the Golf Gambling Podcast polos. They're very comfortable, really good material. They're very comfy, you know, out on the golf course. So, definitely pick up one of those, this weekend and, yeah, rock it on the golf course.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, let's get to betting strategies. Again, you know, in my articles, and my article is going to come out probably tonight or tomorrow as my kid sleeps in the pack and play, and I'm quietly editing this column to make sure she doesn't wake up. I'm not going through the full gambit of everything, like historical scoring, comparisons to other PGA Tour events, because there's only one tournament. So I don't think it's too small of a sample size to kind of make definitive conclusions about, oh, well, the par threes are tough, or the approach shots were, you know, X toughest of all PGA Tour golf course. Like, it's only one tournament. You can't make a definitive conclusion. But what we can make definitive conclusions, and I'm fairly certain that this is going to stay constant this year, is how the leaderboard shook up last year. It's probably going to be pretty similar to this year because, I mean, the golf course hasn't changed. It's not a whole lot of strategy to it. I don't think it's going to create a lot of variance as far as who does well and who doesn't at this place. And that's the fact that off the tee last year, your performance in tournament was a huge contributor to the variance in total strokes gained in the entire tournament. What does that mean? That basically means that the better you performed off the tee last year, the easier it was to separate yourself from the average player. And conversely, if you were driving it really, really poorly, you were going to suffer. You weren't going to be able to gain as many strokes on the field with some other attributes. And the way that players did that was mostly through distance. There was a lot of really long hitters who finished very well up at the top of the leaderboard at the Donald Vallarta, Rahm, Finau, Kirk Kitayama, Cam Champ, Davis Riley, Aaron Wise, Patrick Rogers. All of them are very long hitters. All of them, I think, average over 305 for the tournament. Now, there are a couple shorter guys like Brandon Wu and David Lipsky. They also did well, but they had a little bit of a tougher time. I mean, they had to basically make up for it with good iron play, good putting, and that just, you know, it's a little harder to do at this place where it seemed like off the tee was very important. So this is a big strokes gain off the tee week as far as the type of profile you're looking for. Definitely shape towards guys who are longer. Now, I say that, and unfortunately, you're not going to get a whole lot of leverage doing that. Everybody's going to be saying the bombers. And I can, you know, there's plenty of examples of other long past palm golf courses that typically favor guys who hit it pretty long. You know, a shorter guy can still do pretty well there. Like, you know, like Corrales, so Joel Damon has won, Graham McDowell has won, Brandon Grace has won there. So I think Adam Long has done fairly well at some past Palom golf courses too. So you could find a guy who might just do very well on past Palom, either putting on it, maybe on some of the holes where they have to turn it into a three-shot hole. Maybe no one's been able to get there. You know, their wedge play can be good, although I don't think that Vedanta Vallarta, any of the par fives are unreachable unless the wind is up. So, you know, you can find some leverage with it, maybe a shorter guy who just generally does well at past Palom. But, and I probably the way to do it would be through their iron play, which also was pretty highly correlated to how successful or not successful you were at the Mexico Open last year. There was a higher rate of how well you did with your irons last year and how that contributed to your total strokes gained for the tournament versus the PGA Tour average. And, you know, that makes sense for a couple of reasons. Number one, I mentioned with the past Palom, it's very sticky grass. If you are having a really good iron week, you know, there's not a whole lot of like unlucky bounces that you might be able to get from some of these approach shots, especially some of these greens are pretty flat too. Not a whole lot of undulation to them. So if you're hitting your irons pretty good, you can stick it pretty close to the green. So that's why iron play definitely was a big separator on the leaderboard last year. But also, it's the type of approach shots too. And it's a lot of really long approach shots at Vedanta Vallarta. Part of the reason why it's a long golf course, but also with the past Palom, you're not getting any rollout with your drives. So once it hits the ground, it might go maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 more yards and then stop. That means your approach shot's going to be a lot longer. So last year, there was an above average rate of approach shots over 175 yards from every single proximity category. I put these charts from Data Golf into my article every single week. Everything from 175 and up from every proximity range, you know, 200, 225, 225, 250 to 250 plus had higher rates of approach shots from those distances. Especially 250. 17% of all their approach shots were over 250. I think that works out to about 3.5 a round. So all your par fives are pretty long approach shots. But even so, you know, a lot of your approach shots on the par fours and the par threes are pretty long too. And, you know, taking combined that, even though there's less of a rate of approach shots from 150 to 175, so 18% of your shots, it's the most popular range you will be hitting from. That's 80% of all your approach shots this week in Mexico is going to come from over 150 yards. So whenever you get to a golf course like that where there's a lot of really approach shots, it just makes the margin for error with your irons a lot less. And it definitely can separate guys who are hitting their iron long irons pretty well versus guys who don't. So there are other golf courses you might be able to look at. I mean, we only have one tournament this year or one tournament under our belt in Mexico to really look at. So if there's guys who have never played this place before, it's probably mostly the Corn Ferry guys who graduated last year. You know, there's a lot of other golf courses you might be able to look at that value mid to long irons. So Augusta National, Murfield Village, which a lot of those guys probably have not played there, Quail Hollow, which they're going to play next week. A lot of those guys haven't played those golf courses yet, but those are all golf courses that value very long approach shot. Innisbrook, a lot of the guys in the field this week played Innisbrook. That's a golf course that also has a lot of approach shots over 150 yards and over 175 yards, mostly with the par threes. Riviera, Torrey Pines, TBC Scottsdale, TBC Twin Cities, which probably a lot of these guys haven't played, but those are also a lot of golf courses where guys hit a lot of really long irons. And you can definitely see in that list, based on who did well last year at this tournament, guys did pretty well, you know, a lot of these other golf courses. So John Rahm has won in four of those venues I just mentioned. He's won at Augusta. He's won at Murfield Village. He's won at Riviera. He's won at Torrey Pines. He's done very well at TPC Scottsdale. So yeah, I think he's got a couple of top five finishes at Innisbrook. Really over those long irons. Ends up winning here. Tony Finau, he's won at TPC Twin Cities. He almost won TPC Scottsdale. Does really well at Torrey Pines and Riviera and Augusta National. So again, Tony Finau does really well at all those places. I mean, he's a great player, but places where you really got to drive it very well and hit a lot of approach shot, long approach shots, he does very well. All right. Cam Champ did very well last year at Mexico Open. I always rip on him, but he won TPC Twin Cities. Got to drive it pretty well there too and hit a lot of longer approach shots. Now, there's a lot more penalty at TPC Twin Cities. I'm not really sure how he managed to avoid all of that, all of those, but that's a good crossover there. Davis Riley did very well at the Mexico Open. Had a good finish at Innisbrook. So there's definitely some crossover. You can take a look at those golf courses just mostly from an iron standpoint, how you hit their irons in those places. Maybe that's what you should do. Maybe go to one of these databases that and just isolate your strokes gain approach numbers from all those places. Because, I mean, there's differences with it as far as, like, you know, the greens are different. It might value around the green play a little more in this place. But maybe look at how guys hit their irons at these venues. That might help you pick out some guys who might do pretty well here. And then as far as around the green and putting, kind of like I mentioned, definitely we're not big contributors to how you were gaining strokes on the field. So I'm sorry, I got a little distracted there. So, like I mentioned with around the green play, I think it with the past problem, it kind of levels the playing field for everybody. You know, it's kind of hard to screw up around the green, chipping off a past problem. And then with putting, you know, I just think because ball striking was so important last year, either performance off tee and approach play, it's got to come from somewhere else. So probably putting. It definitely wasn't a putting contest. So overall, that's what I'm going to be focusing a lot this week. Off the tee performance, shading towards longer players, guys who excel from over 150 yards, maybe hit their irons pretty well at some of those other venues I just talked about. There's also, you can look at how guys do a past problem. I mentioned that earlier. There are four other golf courses we've seen on the PGA Tour that have past problem. Obviously, there's the Ocean Course at Kiawah. That might not be the great comparison because that was a major venue, but Grand Reserve, the Puerto Rico Open, El Camaleon, Mayakoba, Corrales. Great venues to look at because this is a very bad field. Most of the players in the field this week has played those venues a lot. And maybe that's an opportunity to find, you could find a shorter player who just does very well at some of those other golf courses. Like, for example, I mean, you know, we talk about driving distance, but Puerto Rico Open, that's a very long golf course. Corrales is really long too. And, you know, you got to drive it pretty well there. Usually longer players have an edge at both those places. Yet there are shorter players who've done well there, probably because they hit their irons over 150 pretty good. Those might be something to look at. And then on the European Tour, I think there's a couple guys who are in the field this week that play a lot of Euro Tour golf. I'm going to guess Dietrich's probably in the field. Maybe a couple of Højgaards are in the field too. So some golf courses you can look at over the DP World Tour. Yas Golf Links, that's where the Abu Dhabi HSBC is played. That's past problem. Alhambra Golf Club for the Ras El Khaimah Classic. That's past problem. Doha Golf Club for the Qatar Masters. That's past problem. Royal Greens for the Bonesaw Classic, the Saudi International. That's past problem. And then Al Muj Golf for the Oman Open. There's also a couple golf courses that they played during COVID. They went to the Canary Islands, and those are past problem. The Gulf Coast of Dehe played two tournaments. Played the Tenerife Open, the Grand Canary Islands Championship. I believe Garrick Higo won one of those and finished top five in another one, and he's a long hitter. Maybe it's Garrick Higo week. We'll see. So because past problem is not really a grass that guys play a whole lot, you might want to look at some of these venues, especially some of the guys who maybe are more, you see more on the DP World Tour, at least during their career. Maybe look at some of those European venues. But, you know, overall, I think this is a pretty straightforward week. I don't think there's really a whole lot of tricks to it. I think bombers are probably going to be popular, but, you know, I mean, a lot of the guys hit it pretty long now, and it probably comes down to, all right, first criteria, how well you do off the tee. Are you pretty long? Second criteria, how long do you hit your long irons? So that's probably what we're looking for this week. As far as how the odds are going to shape out, my producer seems to think that Rahm is going to be minus 110, and I don't think he's going to be minus 110. There's actually kind of precedent for Rahm going to a field like this that is incredibly weak. This is weaker than what it was last year, and he's also playing great golf, and he's playing against kind of bums. Anytime you play some of those Spanish Opens or the Valderrama Masters or Andalusia Masters, you know, I mean, maybe I think he has like maybe Sergio or Fitzpatrick as his main competition. That's really about it. Here you got Tony Finau really as his own only competition. But in all those tournaments, though, Rahm was never less than plus 225. And I think that's probably where he's going to settle. I think he's going to open at plus 225. I think last year he was 4-1, 3-1 maybe. I think he's going to be less this year because, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, Finau is still a formidable foe. If he wasn't in the field, then yeah, probably I would say plus 125 at this point. I think plus 225 is what he's going to open at. Finau, I'm going to probably say 8-1. That's about where Fitzpatrick and Sergio was when you have those Spanish Masters and Andalusia Masters that when Rahm shows up, he's the big favorite. After that, though, I guess Wyndham Clark is probably going to be, oh God, maybe 18-1. Man, that's gross. Patrick Rogers probably will be in the 20s. Woodland's probably going to be like 25-1. Aaron Rye probably will be 30-35-1 because he's playing pretty well. Man, this field stinks. Oh, God. It's going to be bad. So as far as how I'm going to bet this week, I don't know. Am I really going to single bullet Rahm? I have Rahm available in one and done, by the way. Do I want to burn him this week for if he wins 1.2 million? I don't know if I'm going to do that because I think he might win the PGA. I think he might go back to back. Probably another big money tournament he's probably going to win later in the year too. Maybe Murfield Village. Maybe I save him for that. I don't know. I have an 11-hour drive ahead of me to think about who I'm going to bet. I have a couple days on the beach and the golf course. Down in the Outer Banks, think about who I'm going to bet. Probably going to be making some bets on the golf cart with beer and sun. Just get me there. So, all right. Well, that's it. If you watched early this morning, thanks for tuning in. If you're just catching this this weekend, hopefully I was able to provide you guys some informative stuff. I know it's not the full detailed preview of what you usually used to, but I think I hit on all the major points. And honestly, with this place, I don't think there's a whole lot of strategy to it as far as what you're really looking for this week. So with that, good luck. If you're sweating, live Adelaide. Or live Australia. Sorry if I butchered that. If you're sweating any live bets, Taylor Gooch has a 10-shot lead. I bet Taylor Gooch. And if he somehow blows it, this is probably my last podcast. I'm going to be completely honest. I also laid a big bet on Cantlay and Xander, the Zurich, just for top 10. So I caught a bad price. I was pretty upset about how they did. First round, they came back with a vengeance yesterday, so hopefully that catches. Might end up being a pretty good week. Give me a little bit of spending money for the vacation based on some results. So hopefully Gooch can not blow a 10-shot lead, not pull a double Russell Henley, as I would like to call it, and hopefully Cantlay and Xander can continue to do well this week, and we'll see. So with that, good luck with your betting or sweating bets this week, and good luck forming your Mexico Open card.